Good afternoon and welcome into another hour of Woods and Water, South Carolina. As they say in the state offices when you call them, it's a great day to be in South Carolina. And the outdoors in South Carolina just wide open. How many of you, you know, we're 6 months into the year here, people. What have you done in the past 6 months, more than you did the past 6 months before that, to be in the outdoors? There is so much out there to do. Holy smoke, there's so much out there to do. And you know, in fact, the Toledo Bassmaster just released their 100 best lakes list, and there's a bunch of good ones in there from the southeast, from South Carolina. Some great lakes. So anyway, welcome to the show. My name is Roger Metz. You're listening to 94.5 WGTK FM, The Answer, out of Greenville. And we're just going to jump into it. I was in Charleston last weekend for the 4th, and I hope you had a great 4th. I'll get into the 4th just a little bit longer. But while I was down there, I dropped into Patrick Walters' house, and he and I sat down and talked about, I don't know, college fishing and his career. And, you know, he's a aspiring fisherman who just won a Bassmaster Open and looking to join the Elite Series here in the next few years. If he can, if he keeps fishing like he is now, it won't take him long. So we've got that on today's show, and we're going to have some calendar of events that's going to start here in just a few minutes. Plus, I got some stories that I think are pretty interesting that I hope you will think are interesting. One of them entitled about drowning, so it's kind of eye-opening that we'll get into the last one. But we're going to jump right in. Let's go to the calendar of events, which is brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing and Event Center. And in that, congratulations to Lake Hartwell, which made the, let's see if I can find it here, in the Southeast Division of the Bassmaster 100 Best Lakes, Lake Hartwell. Doggone it, made number 22. Guess what was number two? I mean, Sam Ray, Toledo Bend, Texas, Louisiana was the first. Guess what was number two on the list? Santee Cooper, Marion and Moultrie. You know, in Patrick, when Patrick and I were talking about, and I don't think this made it into our conversation, but we were talking about it, and he loves fishing those lakes, and he said those are two of the most underutilized lakes ever to be as good a fishing as they are. So, yeah, number two, Santee Cooper. A couple more that made the Southeast list here. Santee Cooper. Lake Murray was number 10th. Then you got Clark's Hill, made number 19, and then Lake Hartwell, 22nd. So, some good lakes in there from South Carolina, and you know, I wish I'd had a chance to say this, but, you know, July the 4th was Free Fishing Day in South Carolina. Could have gone without a license. So, oh, well, mark that down for next year, although a license to fish in South Carolina is peanuts compared to what you get. So let's get on with the calendar. That's the 100 best lakes. Yep. Got one more page. Nope, one more page. Okay, all right, from the Department of Natural Resources. This is kind of calendar eventsy, but it's new regulations. New catch limit for red drum went into effect July the 1st. And I was down there red fishing and didn't even know it, but we weren't planning on keeping anything. I think we caught a couple of over slots and a couple of, you know, lower slots. Good fishing day. Okay. Red drum, redfish, spotted tail, channel bass, whatever you want to call them. Saltwater game fish has some new regulations. State biologists say they've documented a declining trend in the state's red drum population, which has been underscored by reports from longtime local anglers. They went to the board. And they changed it. So here we go. The new catch limit allows two fish per person per day and no more than six fish per person per day effective July the 1st, 2018. Previous catch limit was three fish per person per day with no boat limit. The slot limit, 15 to 23, remains unchanged. So mark that down in your books when you're going to the coast. It dropped the daily catch limit from three to two and from a no boat limit to six per boat. And a lot of it's interesting listening to a lot of guides down in Charleston talk about it, that this is their livelihood, and it is something they're very concerned about. There are also new size limit and dates in place for Santee striped bass. The changes to state law effective immediately, which would be May 3rd, stipulate within the boundaries of the Santee River system, including Lakes Marion and Moultrie, from October 1st through June 15th, it is unlawful to take or possess a striped bass less than 23 inches or greater than 25 inches, provided that one striped bass taken or possessed may be greater than 26 inches. So that's a change there. Beware. And the dates on that one is kind of what you need to key in on. And then those limits on the slot. Beaufort Water Festival, July 13th through the 22nd. So you can go to Beaufort, stay all week, and have something different to do every day. Friday's opening, you know, festival and all. Saturday, July 14th, there's a raft race, bocce tournament, badminton tournament, a children's toad fishing tournament. I don't think they're fishing for toads, but, you know. Hey, you can get out and take a shrimp boat tour, the concert at night, river rally on Sunday, kids' day, shrimp boat tours, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There's all sorts of stuff. There's a bed race on Friday, a river dance Friday. Saturday, an air show at Waterfront Park. And that's all in Beaufort, South Carolina, not Beaufort, North Carolina. You got to get those spelling and those pronunciations right there. July 13th through the 22nd. Let's see if I can get down here through all this extra pages and get to the next one. South Carolina Wildlife Federation, their Wild Summer Nights Auction and Wild Game Feast is coming up on Saturday, July the 21st from 6 to 10. It's a Seawells Catering, Rosewood Drive in Columbia. And they usually have around 400 people. They'll auction off anything you could want that you normally get at a wildlife, at a wild game dinner. Art, jewelry, guided hunting and fishing, bird watching trips, both in South Carolina and other places. Equipment, live and silent auctions, prize drawing. But the big thing is the wild game. And you'll get pretty much everything, you know, venison, quail, duck, alligator, catfish, shrimp, much more. Business casual is $75 a ticket, and it's all for them. They're a nonprofit, and this is their fundraiser for the year. So South Carolina Wildlife Federation, Wild Summer Nights Auction and Wild Game Feast in Columbia coming up on the 21st. Then we roll over to the South Carolina Peach Festival. Oh, speaking of which, do you know the peach milkshakes at back at Chick-fil-A, right? And you can get those every day of the week except for Sunday. But the South Carolina Peach Festival is coming up Thursday, July 19th through Saturday, July the 28th. And, there's just peaches and more peaches. There's a mud bog on Friday, July 20th. Saturday, there's a road race, car show, live music, talent night on the 26th, wrestling on the 27th, and a race at Cherokee Speedway on the 28th. So kickoff will be held downtown, Limestone Street in Gaffney. All of the events listed will take place at various locations. So that's always a good one in the upstate to get a hold of. Okay, well, last thing, Department of Natural Resources is looking for volunteers to participate in the Summer Turkey Survey. Annually, DNR conducts a Summer Turkey Survey to estimate reproduction and recruitment of wild turkeys in South Carolina. It includes biologists, technicians, officers, and a lot of you people who like to turkey hunt. So the survey period is July 1st to August 29th. You'll need to be able to identify wild turkeys and difference between hens, poults, and gobblers. You know, just during your normal outdoor activities is when you're going to make your observations. You can print a survey form from the DNR website. One county on each survey form, please. Try to avoid, you know, duplication. But anyway, this is a good tool that they use every year for turkey recruitment. Hang on, Patrick Walters on the other side of the break. Well, I had to come to Charleston, and we've been talking about doing this for a couple of months now, but seeing I was in town, I called up Patrick Walters, formerly the University of South Carolina Anglers, and I said, hey, Patrick, we need to catch up like we've been talking about for a couple of months. He said, well, just come over to the house. So, hey, we're sitting between two boats here. Got fishing stuff all over the place. So not a better setting to talk a little fishing.
Man, you make it sound bad coming to the low country, coming to this neck of the woods. Man, it's Roger, I'm glad to have you here. You know, I'm happy to be on Woods and Water with you. You know, every time you give me a phone call, I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's always a good time being with you on the radio.
We have some fun. I will say, definitely. When you're on the radio, when we're sitting here talking or we're at a fishing tournament, we've always had a lot of fun. Definitely. And I've watched you fish a few tournaments.
A couple.
Amazingly enough,
even in the rain, I'm proud of you, Roger. You put up with us a lot more than a lot of people do. You know, some people it starts to drizzle a little bit, and they're like, "All right, we'll see you back at weigh in." But Roger, you have stayed there through thick and thin with us.
Well, I mean, good rain gear will do that to you. But yeah, I mean, you know, going back to that rain, that was April of 15. Y'all were on Murray. I mean, at times it was raining sideways. I mean, those are three fun days on your home lake, and it ended in a FLW Collegiate Championship.
It did, and it was just one of those ones you couldn't have scripted it any better. I mean, every decision you made was the right one. It was almost like you weren't even thinking, you know. And the support from you and my dad and y'all following us the whole time, it was just one of those tournaments where you just felt like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
I mean, everything just fell into place, and We took that momentum on for me and Geddes all the way through college fishing, and my last partner Tyler. All you know, it's been a good college career. It really has.
Yeah. You know, and you almost repeated on Wheeler. Drove all the way to Wheeler to see you guys, and hey, look, a pound and an ounce.
A pound
for a repeat. I mean, that was an incredible show.
It was. It was just one of those ones, you got so close. The first day we had 17 pounds. I was like, man, if we just can maintain this. And the second day, there was no wind or anything.
Oh, it was hot, slick, and nasty.
It was horrible. And yep. We really fell off. We scrapped out another limit for 12 pounds. And if we would have just had 13 pounds pulled one more time on day two, we would have had it. And actually, day three, we ended up with 13 pounds, came up shy. And I'm telling you, I've never ran that much in a tournament to get that 13 pounds.
I don't know about that, man. You ran a lot on Lake Murray.
I mean, we ran all the way to the Cater Flats from the dam. Then we ran all the way back up the Elk River.
Yes.
And then down, and then we scrapped out a limit on one little point down there. It was just one of those ones. Geddes was questioning the whole time. I was like, I don't know if we need to run this much. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right, but we're going to do it anyway.
We're going to do it anyway. Yeah. Y'all had a great college career. College, you got a lot of kids out there and starting fish at middle school, elementary, high school levels and all. How important is that 4-year college, not only for the degree, but if you're going to fish through college with the intent of maybe fishing professionally, how important are those college years?
I think they go hand in hand. I really do. Tell you the truth, you know, without college fishing, I wouldn't have graduated school. Because college fishing was what kept me in school and kept me working hard, you know. Because Monday through Thursday, I was in the library, hitting the books, getting ready for the weekend. Because Friday through Sunday, I was fishing every single day. And mainly my mom and my dad, you know, they pushed me to go to school. And you got to have that degree. All the sponsors, everybody, they want a well-educated, well-spoken individual, you know. And college definitely helps you with that. It forms you. And through college fishing, you get that experience. You get to meet the people. And to make it to that next level, I'm not saying college and college fishing is necessary, but it gives you that little bit of advantage that helps sharpen your sword. So when you get to that next level, you're already prepared for it.
You know, we were talking a little bit earlier as we were hanging out, talking boats. You were showing me this one over here. You know, Geddes was the talker in your team. And the Lord, he's been talking ever since 2014. He hasn't shut up yet. I'm still trying to teach him what a hard break is. But anyway, he was the talker. You were the driver, getting it done and stuff like that. You didn't like the stage presence, stuff like that. But you've got to have that stage presence now. When did you kind of figure that out?
About a year and a half after fishing with Geddes, because that first year was, I don't know why, I didn't want to talk to anybody. It was strictly fishing, you know. I didn't want the GoPro in the boat. I didn't want to do the media, the interviews. To me, that was an inconvenience, you know. It's like, hey, I got to rig rods, you know. And then Geddes is like, Patrick, man, you got to make time for this. You know, if we don't do the media, you'll never become anybody, you know. Look at everybody. And he showed me the examples, and it's a dying breed of people who don't want to do the media. It really is. Sadly, it is. You know, it's not just about fishing anymore. It's 50-50. It used to be 90% fishing, 10% media. Now it's...
The media part was if you walked across the stage at weigh-in and said a few little words about this and your sponsors, and you were done. Now media is...
Now it's everything. Okay. It used to be you did one little magazine article at the end of the year. That was media. You know, now it's interviews beforehand, interviews afterwards, pictures, photos. They want everything. It's the whole nine yards these days.
We're tough to deal with, the media.
You're pretty easy to deal with. I like dealing with you.
We're a demanding bunch. Family, you talked a little about your dad, your mom pushing you through school. They might have pushed you through school, but man, they have been like there every time you've been on a tournament. Either your dad's been there by himself or your whole family. How important is that part in starting a fishing career?
It's really important because they've supported me through everything, you know. I mean, without support and people who believe in you, it makes it a lot harder, you know. Now that your whole family's backing you, they're there, they're supporting you, they're cheering you on, they're there to help out, it makes it so much easier.
And they've done some trips with you.
Oh, they have.
To Florida.
To Oklahoma. We were out there at Ardmore, Oklahoma. Everywhere we've gone, mom or dad have been there, kind of both of them.
I mean, your dad's had enough to your motor because he's been out there fishing too.
He has. He likes to stick one every now and then. He needs to get out there and wet a line. We'll be out there practicing. He's like, all right, I'm coming tomorrow. Something's got to get stuck. And he'll drag that worm. He's good to practice with because if he's biting a worm, I'm out there power fishing the whole time. He's going to catch something.
That's a good thing. It's been fun to watch them at these tournaments with you too, and Emily's been there too.
Oh, she has, definitely. She's getting more of a full time job now. She hasn't been the last couple.
Uh oh.
But hopefully she'll get situated in this job. She'll get some more time off. She can travel a couple more, especially now that hopefully they're getting a little bit bigger.
Yeah, very good. Practice. I like to ask everybody who fishes about practice because you get a whole varied answers and stuff like that. Do you like to go practice or pre-fish a lake when it's open for practice? Or are you one of the ones that says, you know, the time that I get to practice is not the time the tournament's going to be in there, so there's no reason to?
I'm both ways. You know, I'll pre-practice occasionally if it's a lake I've never been to. And when I say pre-practice, what I do is I'll go to that lake. And the first day, I won't even bring a rod out of the box. I'll ride the entire lake. I want to see every inch of it because, like you just said, you know, it's not going to be the same when you're there for the tournament. So what I'll do is I'll go see every creek, every cove. You know, I'll burn a tank of gas out just seeing this place. And that's the main thing. I just want to lay eyes on it and see how it sets up. And so when I come back for the tournament, I only got 3 days of practice, I know exactly what I'm looking for. That way when I start fishing, you know, if I find out a little pattern in this, but man, they're sitting up in this kind of grass. Well, I remember I saw this kind of grass 20 miles away on the lake. You know where to go look and where to find stuff at.
Makes sense. I wouldn't know. I haven't practiced that much. How long have you been bass fishing? I mean, I've heard this story before, but I've heard that this story was back in 2015, and a lot of people listening now don't know the story. But it's kind of interesting, and give us a little recap of your history of bass fishing.
You know, I've always been fishing, from brim to saltwater fishing. Actually, I was always a saltwater fisherman, inshore and offshore. In about 6th or 7th grade, Bradford Beavers asked me if I wanted to fish a Fishersman Legacy tournament with them. And I was like, you know, bass fishing, tournament fishing, what is that?
Those fish roll over, and as soon as you hook them, they just roll over.
You know, I was like, you know, I'll show up. You know, I'd love to fish one for you. And we fished that first tournament. We fished out of a 17-foot Stratus with a 90 Evinrude. I remember this, but I had an Evinrude trolling motor. And, man, that blast off, it was controlled chaos. And the adrenaline rush and everything. I mean, I showed up with 5 spinning rods. Didn't even know how to throw a bait caster. Oh, then, you know, he probably was like, what am I getting myself into? Right. I just brought this goober with me, you know. But after that first tournament, I came home that day. I can't even remember if we caught any fish.
Yeah.
I told Dad, I said, we got to get bass fishing. I mean, it was something about it, you know, just the tournament, the fish, figuring the pattern out. I think the first 10 tournaments we fished out of a flats boat.
Yeah.
We had a huge 18-foot flats boat, and everybody was like, what is that? You know,
but I can get skinnier than you can.
That first tournament, that Fishersman Legacy, I'd like to donate a lot of my career to Fishersman, that whole trail, you know, the fellowship and everything, because without those guys, I wouldn't be where I was at. Because after I fished a couple tournaments with Bradford, we made 2 national championship runs in the Legacy division to Gunnersville, and me and my dad started fishing the team trail and the Legacy.
Okay.
And that's where all my tournament fishing started, was the Fishersman. And then we took it to the Cats, and then it was like, hey, let's try to fish the BFLs and the Costas and then Bass. And then we got to college fishing. And that's really where it took off.
What is the legacy? What is the team and the legacy series in Fishers of Men?
The Fishers of Men legacy trail is somebody under the age of 18 and somebody over 18. So it's basically just to take a kid fishing. Okay. And that's so you're competing against an adult junior team trail. And then the team trail, what it is just any, it could be 240-year-old men. You know, okay. It's the more competitive trail on the Fishers of Men.
And Fishers of Men was started right here in South Carolina.
It was right here in the Lowcountry.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Al Odom.
Yeah. I fished, oh gosh. Here's a Geddes story for you. Mm. He convinced me to fish the Friday Nighters on Murray. And the first one was like 3 weeks ago. We hadn't fished but one because he's been with bass the last, you know, couple Friday nights. But we showed up for the first one. There were 8 boats. And I'm like, we got a shot.
We're going to win it.
We got a shot. And I mean, Geddes is just, you know, he's the dock light master. At least that's what Geddes thinks.
Quotation
marks. You can't see that on radio, but those are quotation marks. But anyway, so we got out there, and a storm rolled in like 20 minutes after we got on the water. I mean, it was white capping in the coves on Murray. I mean, it was pretty had some trees come down on the island we were behind. So I caught 2 fish. I contributed mine to the live well, and he missed a couple. But with Geddes, there's always a story.
Always.
Always a story. So about 11:45, we get ready to go to the weigh-in, and battery dies. So we missed weigh-in and DQ'd. Is that just not a Geddes? I mean, that is Geddes one
textbook
side up down the other.
Textbook Geddes. Always. If it's not a battery issue, something happens.
It's something.
I'm pretty sure he's told me he's replaced that battery 3 times. I don't know if he's replacing the wrong one every time or if he's not charging them. But.
And we had it all torn apart. And I said, Geddes, did you have a kill switch on when you were trying to crank this thing? He goes, no. We're sitting there, and we put it all back together, and it was the battery to begin with. But I just noticed the kill switch wasn't in there, so that's just a Geddes story. And you got a ton of them too, I'm sure. I love Geddes. kind of laughing, you
do.
He is just—he's an aura, and I think he's found just like you think. I think you found your thing in fishing. He has found his thing with bass.
It fit him. It fits Geddes perfect. You know, he was molded for that mold. That's what he does. You know, yeah. He loves the media. He loves, you know, not necessarily being in the spotlight, but being around it and writing about it. Yeah. You know, I think he's enjoying it. Yeah. He sounds happy with it.
He really does. He really does. And you sound like you're doing good on this side, too. Man, you fished a few coasters, which is the FL side of things.
Yes, sir.
But you've really, I think you've concentrated pretty much on the opens because you want to go to the Elite Series.
The Elite Series is the goal. You know, nothing against FLW. I love FLW.
Sure.
Now, that was my first couple tournaments, you know, but to become, I'm going to say almost to become somebody, you know, to be like the next Kevin Van Dam, Skeet Reese. You know, you can almost name every guy on the Elite Series.
Right.
But you do know a lot of guys on FLW. You know, if you want to just make a living at it, FLW is where it's at.
Yeah.
But to become a name. And, you know, mainly just, it's almost to prove something to myself. Just to say, man, I made it with those
sure.
guys. That's the goal, is to get to the Elite Series.
And you're close.
We're getting close. Last year, we tied for 6th place and missed the cut for the Elite Series by 2 points. And this year, we're sitting 15th in one division and 10th in the next division. So, we're close.
Now, it changed the Opens. The qualifications to get to the Elite changed from 2017 to 2018. You were talking about you missed it just short a couple points in 17. This year they've consolidated. You've got what was 3 tournament divisions now to 2 and a championship. So you're going to try to qualify points and wins because you got the win under your belt now.
Thank goodness.
Talk about the win. Red River.
One of those ones you never would even have thought. Going into it, we actually had the Yeti College National Championship the week 2 weeks prior, and we finished 24th out of 169 in that tournament, you know. And it was, you know, when you leave a tournament after traveling somewhere else and And you're like, man, if I would have just had some hindsight and I would have just done this little thing different, you know, I feel like we really could have caught some more fish. And going back for the Central Open, I felt like I had that. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I knew how I wanted to do it and where I wanted to do it at. So it was, everything just clicked. I mean, I came home for a week because it was down there, that Louisiana weather was hot. If you thought South Carolina was bad.
Yeah, well, that humidity down there is a different beast than what we have here.
And so I said, I'm going to come home for a week. I'm going to rest. I'm going to redo all my tackle, get everything prepared. And going back out there, it was just, I went with a mission. And I was planning on, you know, cutting a top 40, getting a check, saving some points, you know. But it was just every single day something would happen. I'd get a key bite and I'd get keyed in. You know, every day was completely different on how I caught them. You know, first day I caught them dragging a worm and flipping.
Okay.
And day two I caught them dragging a worm a little bit and cranking. And day three was predominantly all cranking. And that was the plan. I was going to flip and crank the whole time. You know, just don't want to square bill, crank bait around the woods, you know, and just flip it in isolated wood around ditch shallow. The fish were actually a lot shallower than I was expecting. I was thinking they're going to be about like 3 to 4 feet, you know, the wood out off the bank. They were actually on the wood that was right off the bank. I'm talking about 1 foot and less, where their back was almost sitting on the water.
My goodness.
And I'm assuming that had to do a lot to the oxygen in the water. You know, the water temperature varied from 87 to 94 degrees, which is just, that's like hot tub water.
That is.
I mean, you could only, if you were swimming, you could only be in the water for 15 minutes and your mom's telling you to get out.
That's right.
I mean, it was that hot. And so I guess those fish were just getting shallow as they possibly could.
What did it feel like? I mean, you won a college championship. I mean, this is not a series championship, but it's the first professional championship under your belt now. Or title, or win, whatever you want to call it.
It was, to tell you the truth, on stage I was just speechless, you know, because the whole time I never thought I had a chance to win until the third day about noon. I caught that big fish and I flipped it in the boat and my co-owner looked at me and said, man, you just won. I said, Ronnie, take it easy. Don't get me too worked up. Like, it's still early. It's only 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then I hadn't even thought about the win or anything, you know, and it was just like, man, I got about 10 pounds, you know. I'm done consistent. I did my job. It's for everybody else to lose now. You know, I did my part. I did what I could do. And then we pulled up to the ramp, and I was talking to Kenta Kamara, who was the leader after day two. And I looked at him and I said, man, you got him? He said he only had three fish. And I was like, oh, my gosh. We got a chance now. Like, this is – I didn't realize we were that close. And then on stage, it was just meant to be.
Yeah. I hear the cat outside.
I can go get him real quick.
Nah, we're good. A little background noise is always a good thing. Humanizes everything. Championship. That's coming up. That'll be October at Table Rock.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any experience on Table Rock?
I do not. But actually, my dad fished it last year in the Costa Championship. He made it in October. So he's seen the lake before, so he knows kind of what to expect. And he's actually sitting fifth in points in the Easterns.
Can you believe that?
Yes, I know. So hopefully he qualifies too, and we'll both be fishing it. So if he travels out there, hopefully he'll be fishing this co-op.
Pretty good. That's an October tournament. Now, what's, you know, most people in October in South Carolina are deer hunting by now.
Oh, yeah. August 15th, everybody's done bass fishing. And that's what I love. I used to be a big deer hunter, turkey hunter, and everything. And then when I got into competitive bass fishing, it was downhill from there. I fish year-round now.
Year-round?
Year-round. October, November, September.
Yeah.
Not September necessarily, but November, October, those are probably my favorite months to bass fish. Nobody's on the water.
Right.
The fish is phenomenal. The size
is good. Because they're trying to gear up to get ready for the wintertime.
Exactly. And I prefer to fish it. So, and they get shallow, which is how I like to catch them.
Well, you want a skeeter. What are you going to do with the skeeter?
I'm going to sell it. You know, I got to liquidate some funds. I'm going to try to build a house here soon. And I've got to liquidate some money. So if anybody wants a 20-foot skeeter with a 200.
call Patrick Walters. None of this happens without sponsors. And I always like to give you guys an opportunity. Because face it, last year was your first sponsored year. You got some great ones behind you now, and you're producing for them, which they like to see. You know, we talked about the media side of things, but sponsors. I mean, Phantom Outdoors, Falcon Boats.
You know, the main ones I really have to a big thanks is especially Tupperware Auto Care and Tires. You know, mom and dad. Without mom and dad, you gotta have tires on the truck to keep you rolling.
That's right. Boat trailer tires and
exactly. Rely on batteries this year was the main switch I went to. I switched to lithium batteries. Okay. And to me, that's actually been a big confidence booster for myself because, you know, in the past years running lead acid, when you run that lipo and you catch that fish in the first five casts, which it's a good feeling. It does happen often.
Sure.
When you do that, you run your lipo all day long. Your batteries usually are dead at the end of the day, and you got to jump them off. Now I can run three graphs on the boat. I can run the lipos all day long, and there's no drop in voltage. It cranks every single time. And you can run that trolling motor for 3 days without charging it. So knowing that, you know, I now have confidence in my batteries. I'm never worried about it.
Okay.
You know, Yamaha outboards. I believe that Yamaha SHO is the best motor on the market. It's just the best. And paired with the Falcon, I'm telling you, that bird will fly. It gets up and goes, you know. Fitzgerald rods for Paula, BMC, Zorro, a bunch of tackle companies and rods I got on this year. Without them, they've kind of helped me out a lot this year. And so I'm hoping this year with how much help I've got in the next couple years, it'll, you know, I'm not looking for sponsors ever. I'm looking for partnerships.
Sure.
And that's what it's about is how can I help them? You know, I don't want handouts from anybody. It's how can I help my partnership?
Absolutely. It's the same on this side. You know, people buy advertising, you know, I want them to see results.
Exactly.
You're fishing, you want them to see results.
Correct.
So what's next? We're almost to July here. What are you going to do for the next few months before and the next tournament that's coming up? When's your next tournament?
In the next 6 hours, I'm going to be heading back to the lake. Relaxing this weekend, but the next tournament is actually the third Eastern Open on Lake Champlain in New York. That's August 2nd through the 4th, and so we got a little leeway between. We got some time to kill, and then after that, it's going to be the first weekend in September. It's the final Central Open on Logan Martin,
okay.
And then the week after that, right when I leave after that weigh-in, I'm going straight to Douglas Lake for the weekend after that. It'll be the final Eastern Open on Douglas, and I'm going back for a little redemption on Douglas. So. Hopefully that'll be a fun one.
Tell us about redemption here.
It was, last year I missed the cut for the Northern Opens by 2 points. And I only weighed in 3 fish the final day on that tournament. Man, that hurt. If I would have just had that one more fish, which I lost 2 times that day.
Okay.
And it was just leaving that tournament. No, I think I finished in the 50s and just leaving that tournament. Just like, man, you know, my life goal was a hair away. You know, everything you've worked for, your dream was that close. It was on the end of your line. You know, it was there. And then it was just, it wasn't meant to be that year. And I think actually it was a good thing. You know, I still had a semester of school I had to finish up, you know, to get everything in line and prepared. And so this year, you know, we're sitting good in points, getting to that tournament, you know. We just got a new John boat ready for that tournament. We're going back. We're going to try something a little different, you know. If we don't win it, we're at least going to make it a little interesting.
Very good. Well, man, it has been a lot of fun since 2015. I don't think you were there because I met Geddes at the Palomar Sportsman's Classic in April of 14. I don't think you were there. But, you know, from 15, watching you guys in the first college thing, talking to you on the show a couple times, 17-wheeler, getting to know your family and all that. It's been a ball. I love where you guys are going, having watched you come up through the college ranks. Now, you know, and if I had two kids that weren't mine, it'd be you and you and Geddes, and to see him on the media side doing what he loves and to see you doing your stuff on the fishing side, it's just been a lot of fun. Thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Roger, I'm glad you could be a part of it. You know, without you, we wouldn't be where we're at. I mean, thanks to you. I mean, you've helped us out a lot. It's like you're my stepdad. I mean, you've taken care of Geddes and I a lot, and we really appreciate it. I'm glad to be here with you on Woods and Water.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be the last time. It's tough because you're busy, I'm busy. You know, times like this when we can sit down and talk, may not get around, but let's keep in touch. Certainly we're going to catch up as this year comes to a close. And best wishes. The Elite Series would be it'd be fun to see you on some of those lakes, too.
That's the goal. I got to go up there and hang out with Andy and Casey for a little bit. Got to keep, you know, South Carolina proud.
Sure. Man, and speaking of South Carolina, we turn out some good anglers.
Tell you the truth, me and Dad, we've been talking about it a lot, you know. I've fished a good bit of the lakes in the entire Southeast now. You know, we talked about moving to Alabama or Tennessee somewhere just because, man, you know, we want to be on the best fisheries, yeah. You know. But to tell you the truth, I think South Carolina, we are centrally located. We're right there between Florida and New York.
Yeah.
You know, it's not far to Alabama, about 7 hours. And I think we have the most consistent and best fisheries in the entire country because we have mountain lakes. You can go to Hartwell. You got spotted bass, blueback herring. You can go to Murray. You can go to Watery. I mean, we've got everything. You can come right here to Sandy Cooper. You can fish grass, cypress trees, super shallow water, almost like you're in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can go right here to the Cooper River. We got all the tidal water fisheries, Winyah Bay. And South Carolina, it's been bringing big tournaments. I mean, the Classic on Hartwell multiple times, the Cup on Murray. The big tournaments are here. So if you master these lakes, there's some money to be won right here in the state of South Carolina.
And you can take everything you learn here and take it somewhere else.
100%. Because, see, when everybody comes here, nobody has blueback herring like we have. So when they come here, they're confused. And so if you just – you can take all these tools from the state of South Carolina. If you fish every lake, you're going to be a well-rounded angler.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, it's good catching up to you. Let's do it again later on this summer, fall. And, man – best wishes the rest of the year.
Roger, thank you. Anytime you call, I'm going to answer.
Good enough, Patrick.
Well, welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Boy, Patrick, I enjoy talking to him. He's an example, I think, of a really well-educated, well-presented young man who's come out through the fishing industry, and I don't think it's going to be about a couple of years before you see him on the Elite Tour. Maybe not a couple of years. Need a couple of congratulations in order here. The team from North Augusta, South Carolina, of Kyler McKay and Chad Champy won the TBF 2018 National Championship on Pickwick Lake in Florence, Alabama. Congratulations to them. They had a world championship after that, which they qualified for. I think they finished last place on that one. But, you know, fishing is a sport of ounces, and they won by four. They had 57 pounds, 10 ounces, and the team behind them had 57 pounds, 6 ounces. So congratulations to them. Congratulations to Casey Ashley. You know, Casey does not like smallmouth fisheries, and he'll be the first to tell you. But, you know, they were in Lake Owyhee in Pierre, South Dakota last weekend, and Casey came in second. You know, not bad. I think he's going to have to readjust his attitude towards this brown fish. And let's see. Oh, yeah, fish and chip for this week. If you're in Charleston and you have access to a boat, grab a spinning rod, a topwater plug, or a spoon. The Spanish mackerel are thick in Charleston Harbor right now. We sat out there last Friday morning. I guess a week ago now, a friend of mine, and just watched those Spanish mackerel sky. They were coming out of the water chasing bait fish. It was so much fun to watch. Caught a few, lost more. But if you want to go do something fun that doesn't take a whole lot of tackle, that's something you can do. Spanish mackerel in Charleston Harbor. Let's see. I wanted to get to this. With summertime here, I was looking around and ran across this article, and it just, wow, it was powerful. So here we go. Drowning doesn't look like drowning. This is Mario Vitone, April 26, 2018. This is from Soundings Online. One of the first things I ever wrote for publication was a short article about drowning recognition for a Coast Guard magazine. And he's published it several times. So here's how it starts out. The new captain jumped from the deck, fully dressed, and sprinted through the water. A former lifeguard, he kept his eye on his victim and headed straight for a couple who were swimming between their anchored sport fish and the beach. "I think he thinks you're drowning," the husband said to his wife. They had been splashing each other, and she had screamed, but now they were just standing neck deep on a sandbar. "We're fine. What is he doing?" she asked, a little annoyed. "We're fine," the husband yelled, waving him off. But this captain kept swimming hard towards him. "Move," he barked as he sprinted between the stunned owners. Directly behind them, not 10 feet away, their 9-year-old daughter was drowning. Safely above the surface in the arms of the captain, she burst into tears and screamed, "Daddy." How did this captain know from 50 feet away what the father couldn't recognize from just 10? Drowning is not the violent splashing call for help that most people expect. The captain was trained to recognize drowning by experts and years of experience. The father, on the other hand, learned what drowning looks like by watching television. So if you spend time on the water or near the water, which is all of us in the summertime, then you should make sure that you and your crew know what to look for when people enter the water. Until she cried a tearful daddy, the owner's daughter hadn't made a sound. As a former Coast Guard rescue swimmer, I wasn't surprised at all by this story. Drowning is almost always a deceptively quiet event. The waving, splashing, and yelling, the dramatic conditioning, read TV, prepares us to look for is rarely seen in real life. And this is where it gets deep. The instinctive drowning response, so named by Francesco A. Pia, Ph.D., is what people do to avoid actual or perceived suffocation in the water. And it does not look like what most people expect it to. When someone is drowning, there's very little splashing and no waving or yelling or calling for help of any kind. To get an idea of just how quiet and undramatic drowning can be, consider this. It is the number two cause of accidental death in children aged 15 and under, just behind vehicle accidents. Of the approximately 750 children who will drown next year, about 375 of them will do so within 25 yards of a parent or other adult. In 10% of those drownings, the adult will actually watch them do it, having no idea it is happening. So what does it look like? And here's what they say. Except in rare circumstances, drowning people are psychologically unable to call for help. The respiratory system was designed for breathing. Speech is a secondary or overlaid function. Breathing must be fulfilled before speech occurs. Drowning people's mouths alternately sink below and reappear above the surface of the water. The mouths of drowning people are not above the surface of the water long enough for them to exhale, inhale, and call out for help. When the drowning people's mouths are above the surface, they exhale and inhale quickly as their mouths start to sink below the surface of the water. Drowning people cannot wave for help. Nature instinctively forces them to extend their arms laterally and press down on the water's surface. Pressing down on the water surface of the water permits drowning people to leverage their bodies so they can lift their mouths out of the water to breathe. Throughout the instinctive drowning response, drowning people cannot voluntarily control their arm movements. Psychologically, drowning people who are struggling on the surface of the water cannot stop drowning and perform voluntary movements such as waving for help, moving toward a rescue, or reaching out for a piece of rescue equipment. From beginning to end of the instinctive drowning response, people's bodies remain upright in the water with no evidence of a supporting kick. Unless rescued by a trained lifeguard, these drowning people can only struggle on the surface of the water from 20 to 60 seconds before submersion occurs. This doesn't mean that a person who is yelling for help and thrashing isn't in real trouble. They are experiencing aquatic distress, not always present before the instinctive drowning response. Aquatic distress doesn't last long, but unlike true drowning, these victims can still assist in their own rescue. They can grab lifelines, reach for throwings, etc., which is what you're taught as a lifeguard to do. Look for these other signs of drowning when persons are in the water. Head low in the water, mouth at water level. Head tilted back with mouth open. Eyes glassy and empty, unable to focus. Eyes closed. Hair over forehead or eyes. Not using legs. Hyperventilating or gasping. Trying to swim in a particular direction but not making headway. Trying to roll over onto the back, or appears to be climbing an invisible ladder. So if a crew member falls overboard and everything looks okay, don't be too sure. Sometimes the most common indication that someone is drowning is that they don't look like they're drowning. They may just look if they're treading water and looking up at the deck. One way to be sure, ask them, are you all right? If they can answer at all, they're probably all right. If they return a blank stare, you may have less than 30 seconds to get to them, and parents, children playing in the water make noise. When they get quiet, you need to get to them and find out why. Most parents have heard that one. When your kids get quiet, that's when they're getting into trouble. So, anyway, it just hit me. That was a great article. What we're conditioned to drowning looks like is not what it actually is. And if you want to look that up, I found that on Soundings Online. I guess you could Google drowning doesn't look like drowning, Soundings Online. And this was posted April the 26th of this year. So now we need something fun. Okay. My good friend Jim Mize is an outdoor writer. He typically writes trout fishing books, but he writes for Rethink Rural magazine. It's an online magazine. And 5 tips to making camping with kids even more fun. Camping trips with kids can create memories for a lifetime, both yours and theirs. They will remember the dog leaping through the tent door mesh to get inside with them, the critters that came through the campground at night and rustled through the cookware, or the rainstorm that led to late evening car games inside the tent. It's the unpredictable nature of nature that makes camping fun. So you ready? 5 ways to make kids camping even more fun. Keep it simple. Short legs can make a short trail seem long. Keep in mind that sleeping outside to a youngster already feels like wilderness. So for those early trips, roadside campgrounds can be a great way to test their interest in camping. Don't worry about a plan or agenda for the trip. That would be hard for me. children can just have fun playing outdoors. Rocks and sticks make great entertainment, and you will be surprised how readily kids will amuse themselves. So, that's the first one. Turn the page. Second one, everyone has a job. Part of fun camping is doing things together, so approach it not as doing things for the kids, but doing things with the kids. You know, if you roasted marshmallows, send them off for the search for sticks. Rolling out sleeping bags, help with breakfast. Anything to involve them and make them feel part of it is what you're after. Highlight the fun parts. Building fires and cooking your own hot dog isn't something kids get to experience at home. Fun parts of the trip shouldn't be rushed through, and to the degree possible should be anticipated, giving them something to look for. Hey, turn over a rock and catch a crayfish. That's a highlight. Mix in downtime. Remember that hiking, gathering firewood, and rising early when the birds start chirping is tiring the kids. So don't worry about lulls being boring. Have the second cup of coffee and let the kids low for sleep, too. And five, stay as long as it's fun. Kids of different ages have different levels of endurance. Over time, they will be able to outlast you. Until that day arrives, pay attention to their level of enjoyment in the trip. And when they're done, you're done. Camping with kids can be a family getaway. You'll all remember, especially if the dog does jump through the mesh tent flap to get inside with the kids. The tent door will become known as the hole that Hank made. Good stuff from Rethink Rural, my friend Jim Mize, outdoor writer. Gene Hill is one of my favorite authors with books like A Hunter's Fireside Book and Hill Country. He also wrote Field and Stream, Guns and Ammo, Sports the Field. Love his stuff. And one of his quotes that I think is just the best, our greatest trophies are not things, but times. Think about that one for a little bit. So, I hope you enjoyed today's program. I had a good time doing it, as always. And ICAST is coming up this week. Be down in Orlando checking out the newest in fishing equipment and hopefully bringing some back for y'all. In the meantime, make the time to get out there. Remember that our greatest trophies are not things, but times. Take the back roads when you can. And don't forget the camera. Back more with more Woods and Water South Carolina next Saturday at 3. Thanks for listening. Hit me from behind, 'cause I'm gone.